Nameless is my price.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you the updates and reviews you really need over the internet's favorite, most recommended books, so you can figure out if you really want to read them. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. And today we are diving back in to the world of Sarah J. Maas, to the Throne of Glass series. We have brought you all the way to Empire of Storms today, and we are hitting the like climax of the series. Like, everything happens in this book. All your fave side characters are prepping to all meet up. The worlds are colliding. Everything I could possibly say is a spoiler, but the crew, the gang is all here, and they're all trying to take on the big bads, the two big bads. And yeah, Aelin's doing Aelin things. Her friends don't know what she's doing. She doesn't tell anyone ever, which is a Sarah J. Maas trend, by the way. The female main character will never explain what they're doing until there's like some big reveal. But
Lashy
this
entrance.
Book is a marathon. A great marathon. Like a marathon I would run over and over, but
a marathon I will run over and over and over again in 2 hours.
And at the end, my heart will be just like ripped from my chest every single time. Just so good.
Yes.
I don't know how else to summarize it, because there are 1 million things that happen in this book, and they all happen because of the thing before it. So
yeah, no, there's no way of summarizing this book. And also, we will definitely chat about that ending and what leads into it in the next book. And
y'all, if you made it through all of Throne of Glass up to here, this is your reward.
Yes. But you're going to get punished.
Okay. Yeah, by Tower of Dawn. No.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
God, I'm sorry. I'm so not excited for Tower of Dawn.
You shouldn't be.
This also, to mention, this is where you could do the tandem read.
Yes.
Empire of Storms, Tower of Dawn. My sister mentioned it on the Assassin's Blade episode. She was working on it. So if you're really brave, you can tandem read them, because they happen over the same time period, but with different sets of characters.
In different parts of the world.
Yes, but they all come back together for like the final book. So choose your reading order.
All right. Do you guys have your reviews?
Yes. I have a 5-star review off of Goodreads. And I just related to it very much. It says, "Now I know what y'all meant when you said this book caused emotional damage. I understand. I understand. That ending wrecked me. I literally put the book down, screamed, and started punching my pillow. I was that mad. I laid awake for so long that night just thinking it over. Some of those final lines."
Yeah.
I have a 4-star. I can't read in the non-spoiler section, but I have a 4-star that says, "One thing about SJM is she's going to write novels with at least 300 more pages than necessary, but make the last 100 pages count."
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. That struck so true.
The other one I can't read has a very specific quote from a very beloved character when they're very angry about something. Mm-hmm. And I think you know. Mm-hmm. I think it is the Throne of Glass line.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to read kind of a long one today. Just
but only one.
Yes, but only one, but it's a long one. So I believe this is a 4-star review. Yes, 4 stars. "I had quite a lot of issues with Empire of Storms. Strangely, none of those bothered me in the previous books. I have no idea what happened here." And then he has some bullet points. How many times can the words powerful male, herd male, arrogance muscled male, broad shoulders, goddamn territorial, and male be used in one book? Why does literally every one of the main characters have to be absolutely so goddamned beautiful? Aelin and her insufferable swagger. I mean, I'm all for strong female leads and some sass, but I feel like it got to a point where she isn't able to utter a single sentence without being oh so sassy, impolite, and downright dislikable. I wouldn't want my queen to behave like an ill-mannered teen. Velvet-wrapped steel. LOL. Do you guys happen to remember that line?
No.
Okay, we're going to circle back. We're going to circle back because I laughed out loud when I saw that this review specifically shouted it out because I had a moment where I read this line and I literally put my phone down. I was in the airport and I was like, I need a second. Absolutely uncalled for territorial behavior of the guys. When I found somewhat appealing in the previous books is getting pretty old fast. And somehow I found it really hard to care for most of the characters, as hardly anyone is particularly likable, except for maybe Rowan, who I still have a soft spot for. And then, despite all my ranting, I still gave the book 4 stars, because the story was as gripping as always, and deep down inside, I still love this powerful, muscled, broad-shouldered, and insufferable, sassy, goddamned bunch.
I was about to say, I fucking love Aelin Sass.
Are you reading a Sarah Jane Moss book if the female main character isn't a little bit spicy?
Yeah. I do have some unpopular opinions, I think, on this one. But we can go ahead and get into what you guys actually rated it. Oh, we need to do. So the Goodreads rating is 4.6 out of 5, and the Amazon rating is 4.8 out of 5. So very highly rated.
I mean, I think people make the argument that this is one of the best books in the series. It's definitely one of my favorite books in the series. So I gave it 5 out of 5 stars. I mean, that ending was crushing. And I'm pretty sure I read it in a day. It's been like 2.5 years since I've read it, so I'm not entirely sure. But it had me hooked from the beginning. I wanted to know what was happening. I knew that we were still world building up to this very pivotal moment. And finally, these like different points of views are coming together because they've been separated for like 2 books now and they're finally meeting up. And I was so fucking excited about that. So, yeah, it had me. I'm an SJM stan. Fight me.
I read this, I think, over 3 years ago, but 5 out of 5. I like you, Casey, have some things I was like, but overall, just the movement in this book, you all know I'm a plot and action girly, so this book is like the peak. Overall, like anything I had an issue with, I had to excuse because overall, it's just I liked it so much because of all the worlds colliding and characters coming together and all the badass women being badass together. Like, and I love Rowan.
Rowan, my buzzard boy.
I do want to say, Caitlin, because I was looking at this 2 years ago on Goodreads, you gave the book 4 stars.
Yeah, because I went back and rate. What? It, on my story graph, it said 5.
No, on your Goodreads, it says 4 stars.
You might have misclicked.
Who knows? Maybe it was 4. I did have some issues.
But your story graph would probably be more accurate.
Well, I think it imported Goodreads, so maybe not. Who knows? Whatever. 4.5. Let's go with that.
Anyway, I still rated the book 4 stars, so I did still really like it. However, I am definitely going to be a little bit of an annoyance in this episode because there were parts of this book that I honestly really didn't like. To me, this book was like Crescent City 3, where I was like, too much is going on. There's too many characters. And there are points where the plot is kind of not making sense. And I felt like it was too much. Like I also think I had really high expectations going into it. But it's actually one of my least favorite SJM books. And I feel like people rave about it. But I liked it for a book out of the SJM universe, I did not like it comparatively. Much like Crescent City 3, I felt like she wrote 700 pages and really the only thing that like really hit was the ending. And a lot of the characters honestly really bothered me. I felt like they were really annoying and the egos in this book were like really grating on me. Just from everyone, like it was like every character. And I actually found it really hard to get into. However, I read this book for Manon and I read this book for Elide and Lorcan. And those are honestly the people that kept me reading this book, which I was really, really surprised by. So I had some issues.
The story graph review, it showed me wasn't my own. It was Catherine's. Whoops. 4 stars. Mm-hmm. There is one section that I just like can't get over. And we'll talk about it, that I just think is weird AF. So,
yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. I will say, Casey, you're probably going to, it's going to be hard to argue with you because both of us have not read this book in a long time. You have receipts.
I read.
You guys are really at a disadvantage.
Yes. I read a summary today that was really good, but also it took me like 20 minutes.
Yeah, no. To summarize this book is ridiculous. So, yeah, no. I mean, to be fair, I give SJM so much more grace than I do any other author. And I also accept that this is her YA series and her first series. So I give her a lot more grace
this
than probably I should.
Does give us a little more spice than the other ones.
Yes, it does. Yeah,
there's
I appreciate
actual
it.
Sex scenes. Yeah. Okay.
She's an adult writing this book now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's no longer 16.
Yeah. Grow up with this series.
Yeah. Ugh. All right. Okay. Well, for our discussion questions, is the book more plot or character driven?
I mean, plot. There's so much plot going on. I mean, technically, Aelin drives a lot of the plot, but I would.
Aelin doesn't tell you what half the plot is until the end.
But... Yeah, no, you don't know what's going on until the end when it's revealed. So, yeah, it's plot, 100%.
It's plot, though. They're all trying to, you know, defeat the bad guys, save Terrasen and surrounding areas.
Yeah. Yeah. Technically, the plot is that they're trying to gather armies for Terrasen. So they're traveling around a lot, talking to new characters who I did enjoy the new characters to try and get more allies. And then at the end, you kind of realize the plot was like completely not what you thought.
I have a question for you, Casey. Mm-hmm. Did you end up reading Assassin's Blade?
I have not read Assassin's
Blade.
So you said new characters, and I question that because those are not new characters. They were in Assassin's Blade.
There's one character who I can't remember her name, but I was like, if you read that book without reading Assassin's Blade, it seems a little random. But even when I was reading it, I was like, I bet this would have made sense if I had read Assassin's Blade.
Is it Ansel of Briarcliff?
Yep. Yeah.
Rolf is also in Assassin's Blade.
Okay. Because I was like, some of these characters, I feel like I really needed to have read Assassin's Blade to like understand the context.
So Aelin's like reaching back into her past to rally some allies. And most of those allies pop up in the Assassin's Blade novellas. So I would say, personal recommendation, before reading this book, make sure you've read Assassin's Blade. Wherever you choose to read it before this book is a good time to read it.
Yeah, definitely before Tower of Dawn.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah, I definitely wish I had read Assassin's Blade first, but I just didn't have time to do it. And I'm still waiting on it from the library, guys, okay?
Oh, rude.
I know.
Man, well, you should read it before Tower of Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least story like 0.1.
2. I think the second 2, one.
0.2.
All right, I'll get to it.
Okay, skipping over, how have you read other books by the author? How long did it take you to read? I have no idea. This was over 3 years ago, and I said I read this series during lockdown. I just sat there and read these, so I don't know.
Yeah, I also don't really know. I think it was
Casey,
a day, though.
Our queen who just read it.
So my count is also a little thrown off just because I went on vacation in between. So most of my reading of this book occurred on like my travel days, but I didn't have a lot of time to read in between. So I think it took me 2 weeks. I think if it had just been sort of more of my regular schedule, it probably would have taken me a week. But I really did not love the pacing in this book. It's probably one of the only SJM books that I like really had a problem with the pacing. And it was my same problem with Crescent City 3, in which there were so many characters and we were flipping between so many perspectives that it was personally really hard for me to like get into any of them. Especially in the very beginning when there's not a ton of action and you can't really tell what is happening yet. As the book goes along, it gets more actiony and you can kind of figure out what is happening. But I mean, you don't figure out the ending. The ending is crazy in this book, but the very beginning, I really did struggle to get into it.
I will say the pacing in this one is hard. I feel like normally when we critique pacing, it's because it's too slow. In this book, it's like too fast. There's too much happening. Yeah. It flips back and forth too much.
So much. Yeah.
However, would I rather read this or Crescent City 3? This one every time.
100%.
I would still choose this.
At least all the characters' side stories mean something in this one.
Yes.
The characters, by and large, are still way more likable.
They're all relevant.
And all of the points of views are feel important to the story. Yes. In Crescent City 3, I could not say that.
And all the choices they make do matter. It's just that they make some insane choices.
I saw there was a TikTok I sent Catherine. It was like someone said, go to hell. And the girl was like, I've already read Ethan Holstrom's point of view in Crescent City 3.
You did send me that and I laughed out loud.
That's so true. If I do something really bad, guys, and I get sent to some weird version of hell, where it's I have to just like relive some experience in my life over and over again, it's gonna be me reading Crescent City 3 on loop, and as I'm not allowed to read any other books and I must continuously only read Crescent City 3.
That's gotta be like the at least the fifth ring of hell, you know.
Ethan Holstrom.
Okay, would you watch a movie or TV show about the book
again? This is gonna have to be a TV show. Like,
it's giving Game of Thrones.
Yep.
Too many side characters doing too many things. And sometimes you don't see them for a few episodes. And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, you're like, oh, you.
I forgot you were there, but that's important.
The storyboarding and character board, like to create this, you're going to need a showrunner that actually is like slightly psychotic and can just put these pieces together with keeping all of these Easter eggs that then pop in. Like, you would need a Game of Thrones level of like red line ties and lore.
This one also gives Harry Potter in the fact that like, how was she planning all this at 16 when she was like
Every single character and every single detail comes back in this book. It's like,
right.
And there's nothing unnecessary, which is crazy. Yeah.
I've always in Harry Potter thought that was like masterful. I was like, wow, from book one, we needed to know this. And it's the same thing in this series. But she wrote this at 16.
Yeah.
J.K. Rowling could never.
It is crazy. The whole time I read the book, I was thinking that. I was like, I cannot believe she got all of this to matter. That's insane.
And then she gives us Crescent City 3 as an adult.
I know.
Well, that's, I mean, she was an adult writing the end of the series, but
yeah,
still, I'm like, girl, you set our hopes so high with how everyone mattered.
Yeah.
I think that is kind of an issue with authors in general, where they get so much fame and get so much attention, and that's when fans start to demand things. And I think SJM kind of fell into a trap of caving to fan demand on what they wanted to see. And I think authors sometimes, like, because when you write your first series, you're very isolated from everyone. So it's just your vision. But then once you get popular and you have more book series and more books, it's no longer just your vision for the book. It's the vision of many people.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, you know, we'll focus on this book.
Yes.
So what are y'all's busy girl ratings?
Ooh,
I feel like I can't even give one technically because I don't remember. I mean,
I can feel give like one. It's like a three. Like if you're in the series, you're in the series, but this book is long. This book has too much going on. I feel like sometimes you just gotta like stop and think for a second.
Yeah, because I honestly feel like that's part of why I didn't have a better reading experience is that I was busy and it was honestly really hard to pick up and put down again because all of those details did matter. And it was really jarring to just like, obviously on my travel days, I was reading bigger portions of it. But then like during the week when I was just sort of picking it up and putting it down quickly, it was just really jarring because then you would be like, you would just get information with one character and then all of a sudden you're in another character. And it's like, well, I don't have time to read all of this person's perspective. So it was just, it was a little too jarring.
And I feel like part of the reason I have to go back and read a summary on all of the Throne of Glass books is because in this section of this series, it was so fast paced and I did just sit and read that I feel like I forgot so many details because there were so many and I just sat down and blew through it. Like, I feel like taking your time is maybe better in the long run.
Yeah, y'all make valid points because I think the one thing about Throne of Glass series is it feels in her other series, each book feels definitive. Like I know what happened in that book. Throne of Glass throws that out the window where like I cannot tell you what happened in the first book, the second book, the third book. It all mashes together into one like cohesive storyline, which is it has pros and cons, but that makes it hard to pick up and put down because you're battling with the story arc of an entire five book series at this moment. And I'm also psychotic and read it probably in a day. But I wasn't as busy at that time. So I can definitely see y'all's arguments. So I'm going to go with a personal four because I'm slightly psychotic, but I totally don't think this is for busy girls.
You do you, queen. I would summarize it. If I had to say it in a concise way, this book doesn't have great rhythm, and I do think that becomes a problem when you're really busy because it's hard to find a good place to stop. So, however, my argument to make it higher is just that Throne of Glass is just still worth it. It's still worth it. Like, I love Throne of Glass, but I still think this book is a three. Throne of Glass is probably a four for me as a whole, but this book is a three.
To go back to the marathon allusion I made earlier, like a marathon I would run over and over again. It's like a marathon, except you're sprinting it.
Yeah, like you have to make the Olympics.
So at the end, you're a little tired and want to go back and do it again because you don't remember it.
Yeah, you're like, wait, yeah. What happened? Like, I just, Throne of Glass is I think the only SJM series that I want to read over again, because I also think I could have made better choices for like Assassin's Blade and the tandem read. And I feel like I need to experience the whole thing again. But
I will say the thing that makes me want to read the whole series again is the idea of the tandem read. I feel like I would have had a different reading experience if I had done the tandem read.
All right, well, let's save more of that opinion for Tower of Dawn okay. Before Casey gets there.
Yeah, when I technically still don't know what happens in that book. Okay, well, that brings us to our spoiler alert section. Spoilers. We're going to get into this absolutely insane, jam-packed book where, like, everything is happening all at once.
Spoiler, if you want to drop Book Talk's panties, have a man with a deep voice say, "Where's my wife?"
That's what you wanted to say earlier?
Yeah. Okay. Also, before we get into like an actual discussion, I do want to talk about the review. So, unpopular opinion, I actually think she should have not had as many sex scenes in this book as there were. I think it was a little jarring and they came in really hot for a book series that really had not had that before. And I do think her inexperience shows in the sex scenes a little bit, where like normally SJM writes sex scenes that really make me swoon. Like, they do not make me cringe. And there were moments in these sex scenes that I did indeed cringe. And that is where I referenced the velvet wrapped steel. That is how Aelin describes Rowan's penis.
I did not remember that. Oh my god, no.
I didn't either. And that is, it's like, so like the back half of the series sort of transitions into new adult, and I feel like new adult can be so cringy.
Yeah, it does. And it is, it, she has not mastered fully the tone of that yet at this point. Even though she's an older writer, I think this is still her first attempt at a more mature book. And I think in some ways it almost makes it like the first few books where you're like, she's a new writer and you can tell she's figuring it out. This book is like another new thing she's doing for the first time. And we love her, but my queen, Velvet Wrapped Steel, I will not forget that. I put my phone down in the airport and I was like, oh my God, what?
Yeah, I think, yeah, like you said, it's new to her and it's still technically a YA series. So I think she was also competing with the, I can't get too graphic, but I want them to have intimacy. And so when you're younger, that's what you kind of conflate with intimacy instead of like the smaller moments.
Yeah.
And she masters it when she actually fully goes into adult. So I think this series suffers from it's trying to be adult without actually being adult and also trying to appeal to YA.
Yeah, but which did she write first? Did she write Mist and Fury first or this first?
This first, for sure.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure on that one. I'm pretty sure Empire Storms came out like 2015-ish.
So actually, guys, hold on here.
What?
Empire of Storms was published September 2016. A Court of Mist and Fury was published April 2016.
Oh, shit. So she wrote Mist and Fury before she wrote this.
Wild.
Which is what I kind of thought. Mist
and Fury is like so much better at those romantic, like tension-y scenes than Throne of Glass. But I think maybe she was just trying to make the series more adult, and it just, it didn't fit with the tone that the series had already established.
I will say one of the things that I didn't like about this book is she goes and throws up in after receiving some pretty shocking news, and immediately it's portrayed as a pregnancy scare. Yeah. And I'm like, no, don't do this. Like, I understand being visibly ill after getting the news she got, but because of what it was coinciding with all of their newly made sex scenes, Rowan immediately is like, are you pregnant? And it's just like, y'all, don't you know about like contraception and like, you know?
Oh, and that's another thing I hated in the book is they actually talk about contraception and she's like, look, I don't want to be on birth control. If it happens, it happens. But like, I want to have a child with you and like, I want to have an heir. And so I just think that like, we should like, let it happen if it's going to happen. And I was like, girl, what? That is, she's like still like 20 years old and you like just met this man. And also you're, well, she does know
However, if we're talking medieval, their goal in life was to have an heir for when they die.
Yeah. Also, I'll defend it a little bit just because she did know at that point in the book that her life was probably going to be short.
And I don't like it either, but at least they had the conversation.
They did talk about it, which I thought was very mature. But one of my things that I don't love about SJM is I'm like, girl, we all need to be married. We don't all need to have kids, especially when we're children and we just met this man. Like, I know I love also, everybody else.
I did. There was one review I saw that I sort of agree with. It was like, okay, we went from Aelin having like three different enemies to lovers relationships in this series to having like three now enemies-ish to lovers couples in one book. And I'm like, well, that's technically like maybe four.
That was another one of my major issues with the book is that I was like, does everyone in this group have to fuck each other? Why all have to be like fated mates with everyone else? It was crazy.
Not even just sex. They're all like, you are my end game.
Yeah. Like,
we are like,
a week of knowing each other. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. It goes from like the only one that I liked and the only character arc I will defend is Eli and Lorcan. But that should have been the only other relationship in this book. Instead, it is literally like every other character. Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
yeah. Okay.
When did they start liking each other?
Let's talk about the part I hate. I freaking hate. Okay. I hate Lysandra and Adian. Don't think it needs to happen.
I do too.
Also, same. My least favorite part of the whole book is when Lysandra is a freaking sea monster and then Adian's like, I'm gonna marry you. And I'm like, what the hell? A, super weird. I don't know. Cosplaying as a sea monster, just super freaking weird for me to read, but I don't like that part.
No. Okay. I will defend, I agree. I don't love that, like, he was just like, I'm going to marry you. But I fucking loved her as a sea monster. Like, that was fucking cool.
I just agree. Thought it was weird. I thought it was weird.
I love her power.
It was the whole point of that. Like, that was, if the sea monster is unveiled, that means Rolf can bring his troops in. Kind of thing.
I know. I just, it's one of those, like, easy solution to a big problem, you know?
I loved that moment just because her power is well established, so it didn't feel cheap to me.
Yeah.
And I do really love her as a character, but that's part of why the romance felt cheap, is because I really felt like she deserved more than sort of being like this, like, sort of like shambly side character romance. Also, Manon is one of my favorite female characters of all time, and I fucking hate her with Dorian. I think it's the worst, weirdest relationship I've ever read. What
Book Talk loves Manon
they
and Dorian
love them.
Hate it. I have seen so many reviews of people who love it. Also, I really believe that Dorian is just like a different person in this book, and I almost read a review, actually I'm gonna read it now because I did screenshot it, but I thought it was kind of too much of a spoiler to read earlier. Okay. Where's Dorian? Because this guy she keeps calling Dorian in the book sure isn't the deep and emotionally aware cinnamon roll that I know and love.
Well, he had a bog prince in his head. Of course he's not the same.
Look, I get it, and I'm here for the character development, but I felt like he was, like, completely different.
He is. I don't mind it.
I did not like it. I felt like he should have, like, reflected a little bit more. And instead, all of a sudden, he's, like, this, like, BDSM king who, like, wants to fuck Manon. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but no.
I mean, there was always tension with her with the, in Queen of Shadows. So it was already set up.
I know that they had set that up, but I hated it when they set it up, too. I was like, I hate this so much.
I love that he kind of was so changed from sheltered little palace boy that he's like, witch kink.
Yeah, I do love that he's not so much of a pussy anymore. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm here for that part. I just, the romance did not do it for me, and I loved her so much as a character that it's like really hard to watch characters you love be in relationships you don't love. It's just hard and you don't root for them like that.
Dorian's story arc in the final one, I think, will make you reassess.
All right.
I agree. In this book, I didn't love them as a couple because I was just kind of like, it feels rushed. It feels, I agree with Aelin when she talks about it. And it's just like, he's going through trauma and he wants exactly the opposite of what he had with his love, who was beheaded in front of him. So he is deeply traumatized. And I was completely fine with him being a different person because of how much he went through. I was less okay with the rushed kind of connection relationship in this book.
Right.
They
needed a slow burn.
Yeah, they needed a slow burn. They sold me on it at the end.
Okay, because that's my problem. She could make me love it, but
we are reading it, you know, discussing it in the lens of having finished the series, and you are not, which is good to have both perspectives.
Right, because I'm like, again, this is the problem with having so much romance in one book, is you're not doing any of those relationships justice. So to me, it felt very rushed, and like they just have like these moments of tension, but I'm like, that's not enough to like make me believe that they can be in a relationship. It just felt really fast and not very deep. And so I was just like, no.
I will say, I speaking of like those relationships, I love Lysandra. This book made me hate Adian. And mm-hmm. this book, yes. because he was such a bitch to Aelin constantly. Like, we need money.
Sorry, I don't like Lysandra or Adian. Okay. I'm just going to say it. I know people love Lysandra. I just don't.
I love Lysandra.
I love her.
My problem with Lysandra in this book, because I feel like I can see what you're seeing, Caitlin, is that I do feel like she's used as a prop and not a character a little bit.
And she's like, she knows. Aelin doesn't tell anyone what's going on except her. Mm-hmm. And it just feels slimy.
I agree. That's part of what... So when I talk about the fact that a lot of the personalities in this book bothered me, everyone has an ego. The amount of posturing and like, I'm above you in the hierarchy, and like, you know, you want to fight right now, bro, or like, don't talk to my girl like that. It was just like sickening. Like, it was too much, especially as they all like fall in love, quote unquote, with each other. Cause then like everybody increasingly gets more protective and defensive of each other. And it was just like, it was so annoying. But also, Adian and Aelin. I like completely lost my train of thought. Aelin not telling anyone in the book her plans actually like pissed me off in this book. Like, it was to the point where I was like, girl, like, you are actually putting people you really care about in like a really unfair position. Like, on this one, I cannot stand with you. Like, you have gone too far. And I feel like you can write the book where like she has told them and then just not explain what they all know, and you can still hide the plot. But like, she married Rowan, like they're mates, and she knew and married him and like completely hid everything that was going to happen from him. I was like, I'm sorry, that's like really actually kind of messed up.
Oh, it's heart-wrenching. It makes it so much worse.
She's gonna sit in a box and think about what she's done.
She has time, that's for sure.
I mean, yeah, no, I totally agree. I think Aelin took it too far in this one. I loved it as a plot device because it was very reminiscent of Queen of Shadows, where she unveils her plans of how she's going to fund her armies and how she killed Erebin and stuff like that. But that was felt like a necessity for her to hide that, because she needed authentic reactions from the people around her. And she couldn't trust that they were going to lie very well. She should have told them.
Here's the other thing. Catherine and I read Aelin before reading Bryce. You read Bryce before Aelin. And I feel like SJM could only do it once, where the girl doesn't tell anyone what's going on.
Yeah.
You already read Bryce doing it and you're like, I'm over this. However, we read Aelin and then read Bryce, and I was like, Bryce, tell people what the hell you are doing.
We learned from that experience, and we expected a female main character to learn from that experience.
Yeah, I do think you guys are right on that. I think that did change my experience with it, especially because there's a lot of that ego stuff in Crescent City 3 as well. Mm-hmm. So I think just like those two books being like some of the most recent SJM books I've read is like not a good back-to-back. Like, they have some of the same flaws, and so it's making me like much more angry at this book than maybe I would have been.
Yep, fair. Well, should we actually look at the questions?
Everyone's just listening to this like rant.
We have hit on some of them, I'm seeing already. Yeah. But important setup at the beginning of the book. Aelin's like, here I am, the queen, and they go back to Tarrasen, and they go through like all these books just to get back to Tarrasen. They get there and the lords are like, no.
Yeah.
And what do you think about this setup? The nobility do not trust her, do not acknowledge her as queen. She is stuck as princess, which, ew.
Yeah.
I hated him. Like, the Duke, obviously, and you're made to hate him because, but he has a lot of good points where, I mean, he was essentially trying to stay alive after his husband or partner was murdered to keep the country from completely falling to Adarlan and falling to the king. So for her to just pop out of nowhere and say, I'm here, I can take back my kingdom and we can fight them now, you're going to have some reservations. This is a 20-year-old girl and you've seen this war. She does not know of it as well as him. So thinking about it from an adult's perspective of like, okay, yeah, if a 20-year-old came in here and said, hi, I can fix all of your problems now. Sorry, I was gone for 16 mm-hmm. years or something like that. I get it. I get it.
Here are my friends you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really good perspective. It did. I thought it was great setup for the book, especially because I was really surprised by it. Like, they showed up and I was like, oh, what the fuck just happened? It does make me really mad. Like, I feel like so irrationally defensive of Aelin when people criticize her for being gone for so long. Because I'm like, I'm sorry, this literal fucking child was just thrown into the world and like had to like survive, and you're mad at her because she made money while she was an assassin, even though she was technically enslaved to Erebin. I was like, just stop. Like, a 16-year-old does not have the political know-how to like completely retrace their roots and build a kingdom. So like,
she really had no choice.
No,
she had zero choices. Trapped. They act like it was voluntary and it totally wasn't. And so I get really mad when people criticize her for that. And he did that, and I was like reading it in such a rage.
Yeah, no, I was irrationally mad at him. I was like, stop the book right here. No, you don't talk to my girl Aelin like that. Mm-hmm. But looking back on it, he is the only one I give grace to for it. I do not give grace to Adian because he is the same fucking age as her and knows her so much better.
Yep.
Totally. Does he though? Does he know should. Her?
He claims to be like
right
siblings with her.
I think that's part of it though, is like they've been apart so long and they try and like jump back into this really close cousin relationship, and I don't think Adian knows her at all really.
But yeah. He immediately after, because he defends her to
he's loyal to her
and defends
I don't think him. He knows her.
Yeah, but he defends her to the Duke, but then afterwards it's like, he's got a lot of good points. Where's the fuck? We have money, but where's our ships? You should marry a random stranger royal so that we have more allies. And I'm like, Rowan's standing right there, dude. Like, you can't just like...
Rowan could kick your ass.
Yeah, like, why don't you marry someone? You're of the royal line.
Yeah.
I don't see you taking it up.
Yeah. No, it made me so mad. I do feel like, like you say, as the perspective of an adult, I can understand why he had some caveats. However, my other caveat is I'm like, you guys couldn't rally this kingdom for like since Aelin disappeared, and she did it in like a year. So I'm sorry, but she should just kill you. She's better at this than you are.
I mean,
I was like, my girl, just murder him. He is in the way and you deserve it. Like, these men.
Yeah, but if she murdered him, then the other people wouldn't trust her. Blah,
I know.
Blah, blah.
I know. I understand realistically why she couldn't. But I was also just like, that was my answer to like his concerns, is I'm like, okay, fair. But like, and you guys did your best. You know, you clearly had like a hard job to do. But the person who won back the kingdom is that 20-year-old. And she did it in 6 months when you couldn't do it your entire adult life. So like, I don't know what you're complaining about.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a irking experience in the first 90 pages.
Yeah. We should skip to the Manon question. Mm. Her and Dorian's relationship, we already talked about. However, her backstory is very interesting.
It's super interesting. Also, the scene when she is supposed to execute Asterion is like, it's a core memory in my brain. Like, I was
chilling
reading it, and it was actually like making me cry. And mm-hmm. like, cause she's talking about how all of her witches are like so loyal to her. Like, they're not really loyal to the Iron Teeth. Like, they're loyal to her. And they give her the Queen's salute, and she's sitting there like knowing like her 13 has such loyalty, and like she describes the forgiveness that they're offering her for what she has to do, where they're like, we forgive you for this. And it like made me want to fucking bawl my eyes out. It was so emotional. And then obviously she doesn't do it. And then the true revolution is born. But that scene, I had to shout it out.
And then also just bury me with my child.
Yeah.
And my lover.
The best female friendships ever written.
Oh, yes. The 13 and Manon. Yes.
Who die for. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I do think her being half broken is a little convenient.
It is.
It is.
It's interesting.
It is.
But it's convenient.
I'm excited to see how it plays out. But when
I read that, at least it's well explained rather than just being like, oh, solution. You know.
It would make more sense why her parents were killed. Like some of those things fall into place a little more. But this is a caveat or like a bone to pick I have with fantasy in general, not just with SJM. But I get kind of annoyed when like all the characters are royalty and they're like all royal families. And I'm just like, okay. She's the heir of yet another kingdom, of course.
Yep. And the perfect puzzle piece to help Aelin do what she needs to do.
Yeah. Yeah. She has the ability to use magical objects that other people cannot. But yes, I thought it was very interesting, though, and it opened a door that I wasn't expecting. And also it, because of how her two parts of her are at war with herself, essentially. And I thought it was incredibly interesting how her grandmother was just like, yeah, that's why we took you, because we were going to show them that we could corrupt you. And I was like, oh, yeah. Shit.
Yeah. I also did like that it sort of made the Crokins important, because before that, they're really only important because of the feud with the other witches, but they're very much in the background. And so I do like that it's kind of another pull up of a detail of like, and now this is important.
Right. It expands well planted, the world. Convenient, mm-hmm. but well planted.
Yes.
Let's talk about our other favorite little witchling, who I always read as Elodie, but I know it's not.
I think it's a lead, right?
A lead? I say a lied, but I literally have zero idea how to say it.
Our girl L.
Yeah. L.
Okay. Here's where this may be. So my Lysandra opinion's unpopular, may also be unpopular. I freaking love Lorcan. He is one of my favorite SJM Lorcan. Males.
Yes.
Love him.
Of all time.
I wanted to just lick him.
Yes. Like, I love Rowan. And then Lorcan comes on the scene. I'm like, wait.
Big ass dark daddy.
Literally how I felt. I was like, oh my gosh, because you know that you guys know I'm a Cassian girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God.
But I'm not a Cassian girl. I love Lorcan.
But I'm like, Lorcan is like perhaps even my new number one. Like, I love him.
Yeah.
And I love his relationship with Allied or El, whatever. I thought that part of the book, like, actually is what I kept reading for. Like when other characters were pissing me off, I was like, I have to get back to Lorcan and Allied. Like it was just so good.
And they're just like on this little quest together and they have to like perform in a circus. And you're like, I know Lorcan hates this. This is epic.
Yeah. This like 7 foot tall man and this tiny little girl who is carrying like one of the most powerful weapons in the whole universe with her.
And she's like physically disabled.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I adore the way she's written. I love that she's a character that doesn't really have any power. Like she can't fight. Like she is a disabled person. She has a very serious like disability, but she uses her brain to fight and she's still really strong and courageous. Like
she's loyal to her queen and she's going to make stuff happen.
Yeah. Like she knows that she's not like ever the most powerful person in the room. But like she will figure out how to
get her damsel in distressness does cause some serious problems in the end. But
it does. I was like, all right, someone needs to teach this girl how to fight.
Well, it's less of someone needs to teach this girl how to fight, which I do want her to learn how to fight, but more of Lorcan, you piece of shit. Like,
yes, I was so mad.
I still love him.
Oh, I still love him, but I'm like, territorial bullshit, put it aside.
Yes. Well, Lorcan is fun because he's so gray. You like don't know what side he's really on. And even though you're like, well, I know he's on Aelin's side now, but like, is he?
Yeah. But that's part of why I love him so much.
He's sexy.
Yes. Is because he's not a good guy. Like, he's not fighting for good. He's fighting for a lie. Like, he found someone. He's falling in love with her. He sees the good in her. And, like, they have this connection. So he's on her team. But he doesn't really fight for good or evil. And I love that about him. However, the end scene... because I haven't read the rest of the book, so I don't know what ultimately happens with them. So I'm left with a very bad taste in my mouth about this man.
Well, the fact that he thought that Maeve was the best option in this.
Yeah.
I'm like, you think she's going to treat her well?
Yeah. It was insane to me. I did not know what he was thinking. But there's a scene, like the very last scene where like Maeve like takes away his blood oath. He like crawls on the sand on his hands and knees for her. I was like, I have the ick. That has icked me.
I excuse it because it's like, you don't know what that physically was doing to them. Mm-hmm. However, yeah, it is the ick. And
yeah.
I will say my view of Lorcan is still kind of one of, I don't know, but yeah. I like it.
Yeah. I was like, "L, my girl, stomp on his neck."
And she does,
She does do it.
I know. However, she's like, "You should let me go."
I will say, because we have also like led a campaign against characters forgiving unforgivable things. I did not find it unforgivable. I am ready for a redemption arc. I will accept a redemption arc. I think it's possible.
I agree.
I don't think it's unforgivable. No. Think it was stupid.
Yeah,
and not well thought out.
No,
but hundreds of years of a blood oath revoked from you. I don't know. I feel like, yeah, you'd probably do some weird stuff.
Yeah. Technically what your whole life's purpose has been is stripped away from you. Fine.
And I think it's physically painful.
Yeah. Like, I'm not forgiving you yet, but if you grovel enough in a sexy way, I will.
If he redeems himself and actually goes on the hunt, because it's alluded that he's going to hunt for Aelin to get her back.
If you protect our girl and find our other girl.
Yeah, we'll forgive.
And I'm excited for you to read Kingdom of Ash for that reason.
We can't skip there yet.
I know, but there's specific scenes that I remember vividly from them in that book.
Okay. Let's talk about something else that I don't think I like that much, and that is Elena.
Yeah.
We get Elena's backstory and how her mother was the goddess Mala, Firebringer. And basically, Elena didn't take care of the stuff she was supposed to and said, I'll wait till this other girl comes along and make her do it all. And you kind of hate her for it.
Well, because she doesn't really apologize for it. She's just like, sorry. Just like,
it is what it is.
I made a mistake.
You're going to have to give your life eventually.
Well, and then also she was just like, but I did save your life kind of thing. It's like, so you saved her life to kill her.
I gave you to Aerobin.
Okay, so that's one of the weird problems I have with this book, because I feel like that was meant to semi-redeem Elena. And I actually felt like it made the whole
thing. No, it made her worse. It
made her a lot worse.
Pointless. Because I was like, okay, like, I get it. You, like, felt loyalty to your heir to, like, have them experience life. But also, if you had just taken Aelin right then and sacrificed her, none of this stuff with Aerobin would happen. Like, you actually could have just killed the big bad. And I'm kind of like, you kind of made the wrong choice. Like, I know that's a little heartless, but, like, think of all the people who are going to die now.
And she makes it so clear that it has to be Aelin when Dorian's standing right there.
That's the other thing. I'm like, I'm sorry. As soon as Aelin is kidnapped, I'm like, all right, so our new plan is to sacrifice Dorian now, right? Like, that's the only thing that makes sense. And then no one kind of says it. Like, we're all like, no, we still need Aelin. And I'm like, why? I thought it was so dumb. It's like a huge plot hole.
Well, because she says it in Crown of Midnight.
Yeah.
And is like, no, it has to be Selena. It can't be Dorian. You don't know that's what she means by that.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of fun.
And then you find out Nehemia tried to like do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which you got to love her more for.
And Nehemia didn't tell Aelin that she'd have to die eventually.
To be fair, Nehemia died for her, so
that plot point still bothers me. I still feel like it's so unnecessary.
But yeah, I was just like, Elena, you selfish bitch. And she's just like, well, my father didn't tell me the whole story. I'm like, your mother literally died for this and you fucked it up. Yeah. And you're the reason why it's passed down to your descendants. She's like, well, I feel that guilt with me all the time. And I'm like, fuck you. No.
Yeah, it was a horrible mistake. But yeah, she's pretty unredeemable. And
also, anyone else getting Gates to Hell vibes?
Oh, you mean the weird gate?
Yeah.
Ish, but it's more like a portal to another Earth. So I'm kind of like,
I see it.
I see it though, yeah.
Just saying, there's still a chance that one day SJM blows our minds and draws some connections here.
It does all feel very astery.
Oh, yes. Now I get what you're saying.
I just even picture like these gates, they need to go back to the other world. I'm like, is it hell? Is it hell?
I don't think it's, I don't think hell or Volg though.
I don't know either, but fool me once. I don't know.
I thought they were hysteria. I'm just going to say.
Yeah, I did too. I feel like there's some weird hysteria connection.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with their like almost like superhuman, like superpower abilities.
The Hellhounds?
Well, the Asteri conquered a lot of places, so they could have taken those.
That's true.
Them.
I'm just saying.
I got Asteri vibes. But anyway, we're spoiling a whole other series, so probably you want to get off that.
I didn't say what series it was. Okay. I just said, is anyone giving Gate to Hell vibes? And you guys took it, so.
Okay, anyway.
Okay, whatever. Let's get back on track.
Yeah.
We've kind of talked about it, but I want to bring it up in more detail about a lot of Aelin's scheming in this book, and we find out how far back that scheming goes. So in Queen of Shadows, she dyes her hair red and calls herself Ansel, and that's basically her call out to Ansel of Briarcliff to come to her aid. And we did not know that until this book.
Life debt owed.
Then
lots
you have
of life debts owed.
Yes, the Silent Assassins come in. And then you have Galen Ashriver's call for aid. And he comes in and like, we remember her mother and we will always come to aid for Ashriver's. What did you think of all these connecting plot lines? And which one was your favorite connecting plot line?
I like Ansel coming back because I hate Ansel. But you didn't read Assassin's Blade, but we've already talked about it.
Yeah.
However, my favorite is her tricking Rolf into being a part of it, too. She's like, I need this final piece. I'm going to make it happen. So yeah, she has all this in the works and no one knows it. And you're like, why? She's really desperate for these pirates, I guess. And then you're like, OK.
There's a bigger plan here. Yeah,
I agree. I also really like the pirate one, especially because I haven't read Assassin's Blade. So some of the other people, I don't fully understand the context.
They're all in Assassin's Blade.
The pirates. Yeah. I don't think this is a spoiler for Assassin's
Blade. Except Galen. I don't know where the hell he came from.
No, Galen's Heir of Fire. That's all the way back there. We never meet him, but we see him from afar.
Yeah.
I will say, because Assassin's Blade, essentially, that's the first of the novels in Assassin's Blade, and it follows why Rolf's fucking mad at her. That's the whole thing. And it's funny as hell.
Yeah, because I really liked that she sort of wins back the Mycenaeans' home, and we're not really sure completely why she does it. And then she like pulls out that card, and then you're like, oh shit. And then she does the Sea Dragon card, and you're like, oh my God. It's just like, I felt like that one was sort of had the most reveals attached to it.
Yeah. And they were all really good.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
The others start to get, you're like, oh, they've showed up. Nope. There's the next one. All right. Yeah. Rowan's cousins. Okay. We expected this now.
Yeah.
Everyone that shows up after that, you're like, she's been planning.
I mean, I know Caitlin said that she didn't like the Sea Dragon, but the Sea Dragon thing was fucking cool for me. Yeah, and that's like definitely one of my favorite scenes.
I liked it.
It did. Once everyone's showing up, Mm-hmm. I feel like reading it, you're like buzzing. You're like, it's coming. It's here. Coming. It's all coming together.
I just was so happy when I read it, and Adian looked so shocked. And I'm just like, get your stupid look off your face, Adian. I told you my girl would come through.
Okay, so Maeve apparently knew everything that was ever going to happen and organized it.
Okay, so this is yet another thing in the book that I was like, no.
Yeah, I don't like
it. That Maeve orchestrates Rowan thinking he has a completely different mate. I was like, I'm sorry, but no,
it's heinous.
That's crazy.
Just make it where he had a mate, she died, and now he's found love with Aelin. You don't have to be mates.
Yeah, why is everything about mates? And also, why did Maeve even need that to happen? It, like, feels so unlike.
So the reason why she needed that to happen is that's why he commits the blood oath to her.
But I just don't know why he couldn't have just been in love, like Caitlin is saying.
Well,
also,
she wants the blood oath from him because she knows he's the mate. And it gives her leverage.
Yeah, he sees how powerful.
However, she loses the leverage.
He loses the leverage. She sees how powerful he is. So he is only going to have a mate that is equal and opposite. So she kind of predicts it's going to be from the Ash River Galathinius line because of how powerful that line is. And she knows the prophecies and knows what's going on because she's very smart. And you find out more later. So she was like, I can predict that Rowan will be the mate of Aelin or what Aelin will become. So why don't I manipulate him, basically crush him and force him into a servitude so that when I convince Aelin's parents to send her over here when she's younger to train, I can control the situation.
I'm with Casey. I think it was unnecessary.
It still doesn't really, I don't think it really adds up. Like, it's giving Maeve so much power that is like stretching believability for me.
I think if she had been orchestrating things since she met Aelin when she was over there training with Rowan, maybe. But yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, you just guess who Aelin's and Rowan's mates will be. Like, that's already kind of a lot for me. Also convincing Rowan that this other woman is his mate, like, the way the mating bond is described to me, I'm like, you got both of these fae to just believe that they're mates. Like, that's crazy to me. Mm-hmm. Then I don't even really understand why she needed, like, I understand the point of, like, and the usefulness of having Rowan having a blood oath to her. But then she lets the blood oath go. And so I'm like, okay, so what's the point of all of that?
But she didn't have a choice in that. But
do you know how complicated and messy and interesting it would have been if Rowan had thought he was had this mate and then met Aelin and she wasn't, his mate wasn't dead, you know? Yeah. Maybe too messy. But I feel like there's so many ways it could have gone. And it was just kind of like,
Well, Maeve killed her.
Right. It almost would have been worse to leave her alive.
Yeah. Yes. No, it would have. But also then you have all these questions about how who she is and like where she's been and like what her role in this was. It's just crazy.
Right. I mean, we know, but you don't.
Interesting. Anyway, I just thought it was a lot. I thought it stretched my believability. And
oh, yeah. It made her superhuman and super. Yes. It brought forward questions of what she is and who she is. Yes. And I think. Hopefully for you, Casey, it answers some questions in the coming books.
Because I was like, she just has powers.
I just don't think it was necessary, even having read the rest of it.
Granted, yes. I think that specific portion wasn't necessary. Other parts of it were necessary.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because they just make her so all-powerful that I'm like, okay, if she's able to do all of these things, you have to explain it because it doesn't make sense with, like, fae magic.
They explain it.
All right. Excited for that one.
So, the ending. Maeve abducts Aelin because of all this stuff she's been scheming. And they walk into a trap. And our girl Elle kind of accidentally lured her there. And Aelin just kind of gives up fighting to save all her homies. And goes along and gets put in this. First of all, she gets whipped, which... heartbreaking throwback to Endovir, however you say it, her slavery, all this stuff, heartbreaking, horrible. And then she gets put in this box and they take her away. And Rowan's like, where's my wife? And all this stuff. Casey, our recent reader, how are you feeling?
It was insane. I was like, oh my God. And then I was like, oh my God. And then I was like, oh my God. And then she actually gets in the box. And I was like, oh shit. Like, this is happening. It was crazy. I did like ultimately how it all came together. The part that, again, I don't fully love, but also Lysandra. Kind of understand, is Lysandra pretending to be her. I was like,
please marry Rowan, but have babies with my cousin and pass them off. It's mine.
Yeah. Which also made the relationship they had just like sort of sickeningly convenient again. Like, I already didn't ship them. And then I was like,
and okay. This is why I don't like Lysandra.
Yeah. And this is just some weird, convenient plot device. It was just like so icky. And also, I don't really want her to pretend to be Aelin. Like, I get it. They want to keep the symbol alive. But I'm like, I love Lysandra, but she doesn't have Aelin's brain. Like, part of the reason Aelin is so special is because she can come up with these schemes all by herself.
And there's a reason that martyrs are so powerful.
Yeah. And so I'm like, I don't understand why we couldn't rally around something else. I don't understand why we had to do this insane scheme of like Lysandra, like fully publicly taking Aelin's place.
I think this is where Aelin goes too far, and it's obvious.
Yeah.
And she is so, so smart to her own detriment. Because she is a martyr to her own detriment. And so she was just like, I'm going to carry all of this burden and all of this knowledge that I am basically bound to die. And to avoid that fate almost, I am going to concoct this whole plan and have Lysandra be me and then have babies with my cousin. So it looks like Rowan is king, because obviously the kingdom wasn't going to just allow him to be king if they've never even recognized her as queen. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I totally agree. As soon as I saw that, I was like, glaring red flag. Lysandra's not as smart as Aelin. She's smart, but she's not that smart. And she doesn't have any fire powers. So how is she going to pass that off?
Yeah. I was like, they're going to know.
Yeah. Like, but that's why I was happy with Rowan being, or Lysandra being, as Aelin saying, like, no, you have some business to take care of across the sea. Bring her home, kind of thing.
Yeah. Very excited to see how it all shakes out.
How but do you
you're
feel?
Gonna do an abrupt left turn, stop, pause on the action,
rewind.
Yeah, I actually really do not want to read Tower of Dawn.
You have to.
I know. I know. But it's like, I just want to know how all of this stuff resolves. And now I have to read a completely other book in the same timeline. It's like, no.
Yeah, I will say Tower of Dawn gets a lot of shit. However, and it's because it's Kale. But there are some really awesome characters in the book and some really good info drops.
Oh, yeah. It is incredibly important to the world building. Incredibly important. So it needs to be read. But I agree. The first part of Tower of Dawn, I was not on board. I was so mad because I was like, you can't end on this giant ass cliffhanger and then expect me to get through an 800 page book that has nothing to do with that cliffhanger and not resolve it. So
but some of the characters make up for the abrupt change of pace.
Yes, there are good characters, and it's an interesting world that they're going to in Tower of Dawn, and an interesting country with interesting politics. So it does make up for it. But I was very, very mad and hate reading it at the beginning. It brought me back around by the end.
Well, I'm happy to hear that at least.
It'll make the final book that much better.
And that's also why people tandem read, because of this moment right here where you are so mad that you have to go back in time after Where's My Wife?
I'm so mad.
Really, if she had tried to squeeze these other perspectives from Tower of Dawn into this, no, absolutely
it wouldn't
not.
Have worked.
Too much.
She knew what she was doing.
Yeah, because there was already too much in this book.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it.
I think that's everything.
Is it? No, we probably missed half the book, but
well, probably. I just read it and I feel like we got the major points. So good for us.
Wild that you read this on like a plane.
Wow.
Yeah.
The emotional turmoil.
I'm telling you, that scene with Manon, I was actually like sitting in my plane seat, like tearing up, like trying really hard not to cry. There was one point when my jaw dropped, and I don't exactly remember what point it was, but I just remember I was like in my seat, just like, ah.
Well, what if I told you those weren't even the most shocking moments of the series?
Not at all.
Not the most shocking, not the most emotional. Bigger nope. reveals are coming. Bigger yep. heartbreaks are coming.
Yep. Huge heartbreak.
A cameo is coming.
A cameo is coming.
Oh my gosh. I'm excited. You guys are doing such a good job of advertising this upcoming.
Well, because you're in for a trek.
You just got to keep you motivated.
Yeah. Because Tower of Dawn is like the second longest book in the series. And then the longest book in the series is Kingdom of Ash. And it's also the longest book SJM has ever written.
That is insane.
It's almost 1,000 pages. It doesn't
feel that way, though.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like 1,000 pages.
Yeah. Does not feel that way. So excitement.
Excitement. Please rate and review our podcast. Oh, do you guys have book
recommendations? No, skip.
good. These are just our opinions. Tell us what you think. You can do that at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere.
Yep. Join us as we finish up Throne of Glass in a few weeks. We'll hit the next section. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.